Breakfast with Benz podcast here on a Thursday. Tim Benz with you. Glad that you're with us. And we're talking a little college basketball today. Going to be joined in just a moment by Mike DeCourcy. I caught up with Mike on the phone earlier this week to talk about the prospect of college basketball expanding the NCAA tournament. In case you didn't see this, back in January, there was a 39-page memo that was distributed by the NCAA Division I Transformation Committee. The goal of the report was to, in their words, advance opportunities to modernize college sports. And part of that modernization, I guess, is to expand postseason tournaments to include 25% of membership for any sport that has more than 200 active schools. So that would mean for men's basketball and women's basketball, which have 358 and 350 teams respectively, 25% is roughly 90 teams in those tournaments. So forget your field of 64 bracket, forget your field of 68, how about a field of 90? Yeah, that's the magic number, 90. Now, you could do it a little bit more easily if you bumped it up to 96. Like, for instance, Fran Dunphy from LaSalle, he suggested that you start with 96 teams, you give 32 a bye to Thursday and Friday, day one, day two of the NCAA tournament in the first round, and you have the other teams, the other 64 teams, get ranked through KenPom or whatever rating service you prefer, rank them 1 through 64, have those teams play each other, and then ostensibly play their way onto the bracket starting on that Thursday. So you kind of get a bye through the first round if you're in the top 32, and then the bottom 64 play each other on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then the tournament proper kicks in on Thursday and Friday as it normally would. I think there's another way to go about it. I'm sort of the school of thought that, for the time being anyway, at least so long as they have 32 automatic qualifying schools, you win your conference tournament, you get into the bracket automatically, you get what amounts to a bye week while you play the other teams onto the bracket in the remaining 64. So you almost have like two selection Sundays. Play your conference championships. You know all the 32 teams that are in. The remaining 64, you bracket them off, and then you play basketball that week. And you could call it the NCAA tournament. It could be marketed and sold as the NCAA tournament. But then essentially you have a second selection Sunday where all the Cinderellas are already in because they won their small conference tournaments. And then some of the big schools, the Goliath teams, like a number one rated Duke who got upset in the quarterfinals. Now you find out where they're playing. You just leave the whole thing open until you get through the first round. And then you almost re-release Selection Sunday. And I think that could work. I don't like either idea. I prefer we just stick with the field of 68 as it is. I would have been fine if they stuck with the field of 64. That was perfect to me. But let's ask Mike. He follows this for a living. There's nobody better at it than him. Pittsburgh native and, like I said, analyst for the Sporting News, Fox, and for the Big Ten as well. Let's hear what Mike DeCourcy thinks about the notion of college basketball tournament expansion. So, Mike, in talking about this and looking at the prospect of perhaps expanding the tournament to what was recommended at 90, and I would think the easier number if they're going to do this is 96. First of all, do you think it's going to happen? And if it does happen, what would your opinion be of that decision?
I don't think that it will happen, that it will go to that big a field in the near future. I can't predict 10 years down the road, but I don't think that will happen within the next five. I do expect probably 72 within the next 5 years, because that's what the power conferences are really pushing for, a little bit more breathing room for their membership. You know, that seems to be the direction that it's likely to go. I'm not in favor of either. And I say this as someone who really is, I'm right in the middle of it, because twice a week I'm compiling NCAA tournament brackets, projected NCAA tournament brackets for Fox. So I know what the teams are like that are trying to get into just 68. And the ones that can't get in aren't very good. A year ago, there was a Texas A&M team that was projected by most analysts, including me, to make the field. I think at the bracket matrix, there were 211 online brackets by the end of last season. And I think somewhere around 200 of them had A&M in. So we all got it wrong, basically, on A&M. But at the same time, we weren't that right either, because A&M had like a 9-game losing streak in February of last season. So there, it wasn't that, that there weren't reasons to leave them out. And now if you had a 72-team field, there would certainly be room for that team. And if you had a 96-team field, there would never have been any doubt. And I look at Sunday's Purdue-Northwestern game at Northwestern. It was one of the great environments in the history of Northwestern basketball, which is not an illustrious history. But they had on Sunday a capacity crowd with a T-shirt blackout deal, and their fans were fantastic. And it was all because if they get that win, their program is that much closer to getting into the NCAA tournament for only the second time in their history, and with a team that was projected to finish 13th in a 14-team Big Ten, and with a coach who opened the season on all the journalists' hot seats for the people who do those kinds of things. And it was really emotional and really wild, and that's what college basketball is supposed to be. And if you expand it to 96 teams, you rip it of all that. And then you also not only destroy the integrity and the excitement of the regular season, but then you destroy March 2. Because then you get involved in all these games that are involving teams that aren't very good, that aren't national championship caliber. Why do we need the 96th team out of a field that is going to produce one champion? I mean, that's ludicrous. It doesn't do anything for the sport.
I agree with you. I'm not one that wants to see it expanded. In my interviews that I've done largely with A-10 coaches to get their points of view as they've come through to play Duquesne, I keep getting the response of it's just more of a good thing because the tournament is the best thing that's about college basketball. Well, you can dilute that too. And especially if you start messing around with the bracket system that has all the fans, even fans of the sport that only come in for March Madness because of the brackets, if you make that too complicated for people to figure out, it's going to dilute that interest as well.
Absolutely. A great point, Tim. That bracket fits on one sheet.
Right.
Even with the first four now, you can still squeeze them in if you want to include that as part of your pool. You can still get those four games onto your seat. But you start putting 96 teams, and that means 95 games. It's not possible. Are you really going to do a two-sheet bracket? I mean, what are you going to do? And that really matters. I mean, let's be honest, Tim. Coaches want more teams because it helps them with their job security.
Exactly.
That's the only reason. They're not coming at it from a spectator's or a consumer's viewpoint. They don't look at it like that. They look at it like if I'm in the NCAA tournament, they're probably not going to fire me. And I respect coaches as much as any journalist, but they're not looking for the best interest of the sport. And if they want the sport to be as healthy as it is and as lucrative as it is, they need to view March as what it is and the regular season as what it is. You, Tim, in the radio business and the television talk show business, there's a large segment of hosts and analysts who want to look at college basketball already as a 1-month sport. They want to look at it like that because it's more convenient for them to not have to worry about it. There's all those teams out there that they'd have to learn. But if they can just dismiss it as a 1-month sport, then they don't have to pay attention. And so you do this, and they have even less reason to be consumed with it, right? The reason I don't think it will go to 96 is that I believe that the people who understand this tournament the best understand the magic of the bracket and the magic of the Cinderella and the magic of the automatic bid and all of that, what goes into that. And I think that group includes the network television executives, whether it's the people who are the current rights holders or the people who wouldn't mind having it on their air. I don't think that the smart ones look at it as, well, more games will have lots more viewers. And no, because people will stop caring.
And when I talk to Bernadette McGlade from the A-10 and all the other A-10 coaches, you know, I sort of, and color me as being jaundiced then perhaps, but and actually Keith Dambrot from Duquesne is, I felt like, the one coach who agreed with me on this, that an expansion for the field of 64 to 90 or 96 isn't about a third or fourth A-10 team. It isn't about a third or fourth West Coast Conference team. It's about an 11th ACC team. Like, it's about a 13th SEC team. It's not really going to help the mid-majors all that much, and it's certainly not going to help the small schools. It's just going to help the schools that shouldn't need the help as it is.
It's exactly right. Yeah, when I talk to a significant athletic director at one school about this, who sort of gave me the idea that 72 was a possibility, I realized that's really where this drive is coming from. That as leagues expand, they're worried about the number of their members that can get in. But what the Big Ten has shown over the past several years, what the Big East showed in 2011 when they placed 11 members in the field, is that if you're good enough, your league's going to get enough bids. That it's really that simple. And if you're not, if your league's not getting enough bids, get better. The Big Ten would have had 10 in 2020. They had 9 in each of the last 2 years. They have a chance at 9 this year. They'll probably have no fewer than 8. The Big 12 has 10 teams, and they're certainly going to get 7, and they're most likely going to get 8 out of 10 teams. Why? Because they're good. It's really that simple. So if you want more of your members in, then win more games. And so you don't need more teams to get them into a field that's already large.
Mike DeCourcy with us. Okay, Mike, if it is going to expand and the suggested number was 90, I think basically anything above 68 where they are now, my mind goes to how do they best protect the bracket element? How do they best protect the Cinderella element while making everybody else fat and happy? And then I just start doing math, and math takes me to 96. And here's where it gets tricky, because there's 32 AQs, right? There's 32 conferences right now.
Right.
If you've got 32 conference winners, the way I can see it happening is you do your conference tournaments as it is, 32 conference winners get in, you know they're in, you kind of give them a bye for the week, and then you rank 1 through 64. So like if, I don't know, for the sake of argument, an unbeaten Gonzaga team in the regular season doesn't win the West Coast Conference, and they're the best team in the country, they lose in the final to St. Mary's or something like that. You make them number one, they play whoever is 64, and you kind of have a bunch of different Daytons throughout the country in the first week. And then you almost have like two selection Sundays. You have your 1 through 64 the first weekend, and then whoever survives, you go to your regular field of 64 bracket unveil. And to me, that's the best way to protect the magic and the Cinderella nature of the small schools, because you're not messing with them, and you're not going to mess with the brackets either. It's sort of like you can almost call it the NIT to get into the NCAA, if you will.
Well, it's an inventive way, and I appreciate, you know, I respect the amount of energy that you put into that. It still doesn't solve the problem of effectively diluting the tournament, and it really doesn't solve the problem of destroying interest in the regular season, which is already problematic.
Trust me, I'm not advocating for it. I'm just saying, because I'm
100%. Don't give them any ideas then, Tim.
Here's a bad idea, how to make your bad idea not so bad. Right, exactly.
Yes.
I'm going to admit in advance that's sort of my idea going into this column, that it's going to come off that way. I mean, I am 100% aligned with you and for the reasons that you have put out. I just got the momentum in talking to all the coaches and talking to Bernadette McGlade that it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And if they're going to do it, I'd prefer to not see them screw it up.
Yes.
How do they suggest 72? What are you hearing about how they would make 72?
Yeah, 72
work?
Would be simple. You would have a second first four. Obviously, it would be a first eight at that point, but it's really simple at that point. And I think at that point, that would mean all the 16 seeds would have to be involved instead of just the four that are already active. You would have to have them all involved, or you would make that all at larges and let the 16s go back to being in the field. It varies relative to that, but it would definitely involve the second site for the first four.
See, I like that idea better, Mike, what you just said at the end there. And that's for now. Forget when they expand. I would do what you just said and have more of the bloated conferences, the Power Five conferences, or whoever we think are going to be on like the 11 line or the 10 line. I'd rather see them in Dayton or Dayton and what in Omaha, whatever they decide to make the second site.
Right.
I would rather do that for two reasons. Number one, it gets more of the small schools in, which I like. I like the Cinderella element. And then it's actually more eyes on the Dayton region. It's more interest in the play-in Tuesday and Wednesday. And I think those teams should have to play their way in as opposed to those schools that just broke their backs to win their small conferences.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of different viewpoints in that. And first of all, what that does is it weakens the 64 because it puts more teams – more lesser teams up higher into the field, and you'd have 15
yeah,
you're seats
right.
that
yeah, some
aren't
16s
as accomplished
become 15s
or aren't as effective.
And 15s yes. become 14s and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. And, you know, I, the reason that I'm really even opposed to 72 is again, look, I think that there's legitimate, genuine interest in who those last teams are going to be. It's not that hard for it to be identified, but it's hard to get to become one of those teams. But if you make it easy, you lessen the incentive. If you put 20 teams in the NFL playoffs, people would watch, but there would be so much less anticipation and anxiety about trying to get into the playoffs. You know, we've seen the Steelers twice in the last 4 years, I think, 2018 and 2022, go down to waiting for the results of another game on whether they were going to get in. That's what makes sports extraordinary. If you make it easy to do this or easier, I know what the 71st team looks like. The 71st team is not an NCAA tournament team. Mm-hmm. There is a big difference between those teams. That's why, you know, there's a big difference between and they're not literally the 71st team, but the third team out, that team is not an NCAA tournament team. The people that are getting in, like Rutgers a year ago, I mean, they had some exceptional victories, but they also had terrible losses. So they got in and they made them play an extra game. That's fair. But if you start putting in four more of those, it becomes less appealing. And I think what's being lost on all the people who are trying to fix college basketball, it's the sport that has more people trying to fix it than any. And it's not the sport that needs fixed. It's the sport that actually has its postseason perfect, literally perfect, because if whatever the level of interest is that for college basketball, let's say it's a five, just using a round number on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 would be the NFL and mm-hmm. 1 would be tiddlywinks. Let's say it's a five. Well, the interest in March Madness is a 9. And that's – so you've already got the postseason perfect. So why would you mess with it? And if I'm a rights holder and Turner CBS, that contract, which is at a pretty good rate right now for them, and that contract, I wouldn't let anybody mess with that. With what I'm getting out of it, for what I'm paying – the ratings I'm getting, the audience, the attention, I'm not letting anybody mess with that product. And I will say one more thing. The one suspicion that I've had in all of this, other than trying to get more teams in from various conferences, the one suspicion that I've never been able to quite get answered is the idea of, is this about trying to reopen the deal? Because I don't know anybody that doesn't think that deal is undervalued right now, that they're going to get, as of 24, I think it is, as of 2024, they're going to get $1 billion plus a year. Right now it's in the high sevens, high 700 millions. They're going to get $1 billion. And I think that if it just happened that the contract was open, they could get at least 50% more, if not more. So I wonder if that's what this is about. And I really, I'd be really disappointed if they ruined the product just so they could put it back on the, you know, just if there's a loophole that they can get it back on the open market. I don't know whether there is, but I am curious about that.
Mike, before we go, just a quick thought on Pitt and where they are right now in terms of the bubble watch. They're still not ranked, which is a bit surprising to me. And what have you thought about Duquesne's development this year and that pretty much completely rebuilt team on the bluff?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a shame in some ways that because of the league they're in and the attention isn't coming their way. I mean, Keith is doing one of the really terrific coaching jobs in the country after losing all the transfers from 2 years ago when it seemed like there was momentum there, and then having the, you know, record-wise a complete implosion a year ago. To have the success that they're having now, to be 17-8 overall, to be 7-5 in the league, I think it's been an amazing job by Keith. Not a surprising job, because I've always known him to be an extraordinary coach. And the moment they hired him, I was telling people, and I don't know if I ever said it on the air. I think I did, but I was telling people that he was the best coach they'd hired in 30 some years, if not 40 some years. He's a really good basketball coach, and I'm really happy for Duke's fans that they have a better product now and a better team to root for. As far as Pitt, I'm really impressed with the job Jeff has done too. And things got rough there, and he put together a really good group. They're mentally tough. They're really fun to watch because they're so good on offense. It's a fun team to watch. It's wild if you think about it. If the officials hadn't blown the call at the end of the Duke Virginia game, the Panthers were one Kyle Filipowski free throw away from being alone in first place in the ACC.
Yep.
This far into the season, it's amazing that's happened. I think that you'd have to put Jeff as the leading candidate for ACC coach of the year. He's done an extraordinary job of putting that together, and going down to Carolina and winning an amazing performance, coming back against Miami in the way that they did on a day where they probably should have been better, weren't, but still recovered anyway. I'm it's really been fun to watch, and I hope they're able to keep it up. But I have them as a 9 seed, I think, or will Tuesday. I think that's about where they are, and I think they can climb higher than that.
The highest I've seen so far is an 8 in Columbus, which would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, yeah. I think they can get higher than that, but obviously it requires a terrific performance down the stretch and others to go the opposite direction, which is usually how it works. Somebody's going to go the other way, so just don't let it be you. And I think that they'd have to really underperform now to not make it. This Florida State was big because it wasn't going to be easy. They lost that one at home, and now they're on the road. But they got that done, and I thought they finished that game off the way a NCAA tournament team finishes off such games.
Mike, I can't thank you enough for this. Really appreciate it. I'm like you. I hope they leave it alone. If not, I hope they do it smart.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Oh, you bet, Tim.
Mike DeCourcy here on Breakfast with Benz.